Hey everyone, welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design with Dr. C. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline, and thank you so much for joining us today. Entrepreneurship looks different for everyone. How and why we start our business, challenges that occur, pivots we have to make, success we achieve, all while life is happening. That's why I love sharing these inspiring entrepreneurs with you and shed light that there's enough room for everyone to succeed and thrive, even if you're in the same industry. I am so honored today because I have Catherine Chapman with me, and Catherine is a financial wellness coach dedicated to assisting the working class. While Catherine spends her days working at a boutique wealth management firm, she spends her evenings and weekends teaching families financial literacy in hopes of increasing their financial capacity. Her goal is to elevate people to the point where they are ready to build generational wealth. Oh my gosh, this is such an important topic. So thank you so much, Catherine, for being here today.
No, thank you so much for having me. Like, I'm so excited. I'm containing my excitement.
Well, that's good. Well, I'm excited to have you as well. And just to dive into this, because it's such an important topic that we just started hearing more and more about, but not enough. So, but before we get into all of that good stuff, please tell us your journey of how you got here today.
Man,
I know. Loaded question.
Yes, I'm not going to give you the full story, but I'm going to give you a very watered down version to keep you interested.
Sounds good.
I actually started out in the criminal justice space before I got into finances. So I went to the University of Alabama. Roll Tide for anyone who's listening that's a big Crimson Tide fan like me. But went to University of Alabama, studied criminal justice, and it was like my last semester before I was going to graduate. And I took a summer internship class that mimicked law school because that was my plan. I was going to go to law school to be a lawyer, probably help wrongfully convicted felons get out of prison because they didn't deserve to be there. So took that summer class about law school, hated it, like absolutely hated it. And so and again, a semester before I was graduating, and I'm like, what am I going to do with my life? So came around the fall semester, had to take a lot of electives just, you know, to finish out and graduate. And I took a white collar crime class. And with that class, it really delved into like different like financial crises that we had. So one being like all the Madoff situations, things along that lines, or the financial crisis back in 2008. And what really like just icked me is that people lost so much money to people who were like supposed to like help them, you know, have their best interest in mind, and they didn't. And none of those people like really saw a day in prison. And I was like, that is just horrible. People lost their life savings. Just like this class just really delved into things like I never knew that happened. And just like hearing the heartache from people who just lost their life savings, I was like, okay. So I went to my advisor and I was like, is there a way I can combine criminal justice with finance? And of course he was like, well, there's forensic accounting. I looked into it and it really wasn't what I wanted to do. So just by luck through a Google search, I was, shout out to Google. I was like, criminal justice and finance, law and finance, just different searches. And I came across Regent University that had this Master of Arts in Law program and a concentration in wealth management, financial planning. And I was like, oh, I've never heard about this. Researched into it, talked to the school, and I was like, hey, I'm very interested in this. I don't have a background in accounting and finance, but they let me into the program. And that's pretty much like how I got on the journey, like into the financial sector from criminal justice.
Wow. I love that story because, you know, a lot of people would take a class and maybe not like it, but there's expectations or society or anything. Well, I just got to do this. This is what I like was set out to do. But I love that you followed your intuition and your instincts of, okay, I don't like this. I'm not going to do this. And I think that's really brave one and daring, but being able to really follow what makes sense for you and taking these different classes, and Google helped of what was meant to be. But I'm curious, once you did find like your niche of the financial, like wellness wealth and management. Well, it is wellness in our money. but how did you decide, like, okay, this is the route I want to go and continue on?
Well, definitely through my studies, like, I realized that financial planning is geared more towards people who have wealth. And it's not really geared towards people who, you know, grew up like me, you know, you don't really have the means to wealth. And so it was just really sitting in class, like learning all these different tricks about how people maintain their wealth, pass it on to their future generations, like not paying any estate tax or regular tax on it, or paying minimal taxes, different ways that they can replenish their wealth. And I was just like, you know what, like, this is really good for people who have wealth. But what if a person wanted to get to that point? Because I definitely want to get to that point. Don't we all?
Yes.
So I was like, okay, I'm like, there needs to be like a bridge, like to get people across to get to that point. And so then that's basically how I got the idea for my business, is that to be a bridge to get the people who don't have wealth to the point where they're ready to build wealth. Because it's just kind of hard to, like, I know I'm jumping ahead, aren't I?
No, please continue.
Okay. So it's kind of hard for, like, I can tell, like, as a kid, I'm pretty sure people always told us, like, oh, you need to save money, but saving money is not enough. And I hit that point probably when I was in my younger 20s. I'm 28 now, for people who are curious. I know I look young, but when in my early 20s, I hit the point of like, saving money is not enough. Like, because I mean, something always happens and you're going into that money. So it's okay to have an emergency fund and such, but that's money you're saving up is not going to really help you retire. Because as you see now, we have inflation that's like basically 10%. It's eroding all of that. So that was just something also that fueled me, that what else is out there? I learned it. So now I'm trying to get that message back to other people, whoever will listen.
Yes. And I think more people are open to listening. And I really want to touch further on, like, knowing about not just saving money, but what we can do to create generational wealth. Like, what has been some things that you've taught the families you work with, all the individuals? What have been, like, maybe the top three things that are super important to know when you are creating it or in the process of learning about creating it?
Number one, it starts with your behaviors, because if you have a scarcity mindset, when you do get money, you're more likely to squander it away. That's why you see like people who have like hit the Mega Millions go broke in under 5 years. Or you see people that were like millionaires at one point of their life, and then now they've squandered away all that wealth, and now they're having to do little things just to skirt by, just because of their name. You know, I'm not gonna name drop, because
That's nice of you.
Number two, I would definitely say life insurance. Now, I know for some people, life insurance has like a negative connotation, but once you can see that what you can use life insurance for, like, you can use it while you're alive. You don't have to use it when you pass. That's like one key thing. Like, there's so many different insurance policies out there that can fulfill a need. And then lastly, number three is just, you know, be focused on your goals. I guess that kind of goes in hand with your behaviors. But again, like with different people want different things in life. For a person who wants to fully retire, your financial journey is going to look way different and probably be a little more tough than somebody who just wants to, you know, provide for their future generations. They don't mind, you know, working past, you know, 70. They don't mind working to the day they die, as long as their future generations are set up. So that's just like the key thing with personal finance, where I start off with is like, where do you want to go?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the important question, right? The golden question, because you have all this knowledge, but it's based off of that person you're talking to or that family. But I think, you know, the life insurance thing, I haven't really heard too much about. Can you dive a little bit further into that, if you do know a little bit more about how you can use it when you're still alive? Like, I've never heard that before. But then again, I don't know.
Well, to give you an example, if you have like whole life insurance, you can take out a loan against the whole life policy up to X amount. And so you definitely want to pay that back before you pass, because they're going to, but yeah, I mean, like, they're going to deduct it and give your family what's left. But depending on what your, how much your policy is, I mean, you can use that loan for almost anything. Like, you will have to touch base with your, whoever's your provider, your agent, of course, and they'll be able to give you like all the, like, different providers have different rules, of course. So you would just have to touch base with them. Do not go and tell them, Catherine said I could take out a loan against my life insurance policy. No, I didn't. I said, go ask your agent.
That's very interesting. I had no idea. See, I always learn something new on these. but I'm curious, what, when you, I know you work in a very boutique, full-time business, but having your own business, what was that real like push for you to create your own business on the side?
Man, I saw a lot of people being taken advantage of, and like definitely on Facebook, I still see it. Like, for example, there was, I'm not going to name drop, of course, there was a lady that was talking about, oh, you can increase your credit score by 50 to 75 points if you delete your previous addresses on there. And I'm like, that is just a lie, because your credit score is composed of like your credit history, your credit, well, your credit payment history, like how many accounts you have open, like how many have you made on-time payments, have you missed the payments, and there's different like percentage points that goes to each one of those categories, and your address is not one of them. But of course, people were sitting and sharing it, and I'm like, that's just misinformation. So that's definitely one reason I started my business, is to try to, like, you know, put the accurate information out there, because again, people being taken advantage of, people getting misinformation, and then you're kind of ending up in just in these cycles of debt that you constantly see in the lower and middle class families.
Yeah, no, that's so true. Just even thinking about it too, like with the information that's given, like people can Google stuff, but not all the information on Google is accurate, or like different websites or whatever it is. But I think it's just doing your research, doing your own research. But I love that you do have that available to people where they can understand it more clearly if they didn't in the past, or they were given wrong information, and being able to kind of take a step back and look at everything from like a different perspective and what is accurate versus not. but once you started building your business, did you have any roadblocks or any bumps in the road building your business thus far?
Definitely number one is imposter syndrome.
It's a big one.
Yes, because like definitely, you know, if you're younger than most people trying to educate them about finances, there's always that little pushback because, you know, I'm younger, they're an elder. And then number two is just, you know, people have become accustomed to listening to certain people who may not have their best interest in mind. So just to be a new voice in the space, people are always going to be a little hesitant anyway.
That is very true. You know, just going back to the age factor, I know when I started, when I was actually practicing therapy, people looked at me like, wait, you're my therapist, because I look young too. So I get it. But I think it's removing that imposter syndrome and knowing that a lot of times it does creep up, like when we up level or anything like that, but just knowing we know the information, whatever it is, whatever field you're in. So I think I just wanted to highlight that, because I know a lot of people do struggle with that. And no one's immune to it, but recognizing that you can push through it, because we're all capable. If we set our mind to something, we can do it. It doesn't matter how old we are, how we look, anything like that. If you have a passion for it, if you're focused, you can do it. Thank you for sharing the roadblocks and just the bumps in the road that you've experienced. But what have been some of the highlights? Because I know you work with the helping people really understand their finances. Do you have a success story recently that you've been able to help a family or an individual really learn and understand their own finances?
Yes, there has been one man so far that's probably like the highlight of my story. So basically, comes to me and's like, well, of course, he's very much like, this is dumb. he's like, I don't know where my money is going each month. And so I gave him a challenge, and I'm like, okay, you're going to keep every receipt. Every time you swipe your card, every time you pay with cash, just stuff it. Keep that receipt. And then we're going to sit down together and we're going to go through every receipt. So we did that. And come to find out, he was spending almost $350 a month eating out on top of what his groceries were. And so just to see like the light, because we were on Zoom, just to see like the light bulb go off in his head that, dang, my it's like, this is where my money is going. Because I know like with debit cards, credit cards, it's just so easy just to swipe versus with cash, you know, in your hand. You know, what you have is what you have.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a very good point. Just even thinking too of like how much we don't realize because it is so easy to swipe or like, you're like, oh, I have the money. But then when you actually put the numbers down and like see it, I'm sure so many light bulbs go off, especially for that client in particular, because that could be really like, oh, okay, wow, this is where the money's going. This is how I'm spending it. And I'm curious because a lot of people like talk about credit cards or anything like that when it comes to finances. What are your thoughts around having like multiple credit cards or just credit cards in general when it comes to creating generational wealth?
Yeah, I mean, in essence, there's nothing wrong with credit cards. You can use them. Like people will get credit cards and just for the reward points, and they'll spend money on it each month and then they'll pay it completely off. But the problem with credit cards, while they're a $1 billion industry, is that people are paying interest every month on these large purchases. So it's just being wise. Like the same thing with the buy now, pay later, Klarna, Afterpay. Like, there was a story of a lady that had like six of them coming out of her account like almost every day because she was just after clicking Afterpay, Klarna on everything. Cause it's like, oh, I can pay in four installments, but you got to realize, yeah, it's like that. It's like every 2 weeks, I think a payment comes out. So you got to factor in if you've bought six different things every 2 weeks, that's, yeah, a lot of money that's coming out still.
Wow. And how do you help people like plan? So like outside of the client you just gave the example of, how do you really help people understand their finances on like a day-to-day basis outside of just like looking at where the money's going?
Okay. So, well, the number one thing that we do is like, I have a financial software that they'll input their information into. And then about 2 days later, we'll go over it, but the software will go through, give you a full, complete, like, financial picture, and it'll even recommend you some things that you can do, like, such as making a budget. Sometimes I don't tell people, I don't say the budget word, because that already triggers negative feelings, so we'll say, this is a spending plan for you. Yeah, so it really takes the person to be honest for this to work, but this gives me a financial snapshot. So let's say, for example, a person comes in and they're like, oh, we're spending like $1,000 on car insurance for the year. First thing we're going to do, we're going to start to look to see where we can trim down expenses. Is there something you want to get rid of? I remember one story I was talking with a financial coach. They suggested that the family cut off the cable for like 6 months because it was over $200 a month. Oh. And so the dad didn't really want to do that because they had the sports package. But it was really for football season. So he was willing to cut it off like in the gap between baseball and football season. So he was willing to cut it off then so they could save up extra money, pay off some things, and then they were able to have additional cash flow. And then he was able to get his sports package back. So, you know, you have to be creative when it comes to finances and then working with different people. Like, for example, you may meet the dad who's not getting rid of his sports package and he don't care.
Mm-hmm. Understandable. And I think too, it's just, I love that you are able to really work with your clients and understanding what their needs are, but how you can trim it. And I love that you switched like the word budget, like taking that out, because you're right. A lot of people have that negative connotation towards that word, but I'm curious when somebody is in the middle class, because a lot of times they think, I need to have X amount of money to have somebody helping me with my finances or having a financial planner. What are some of the key things to realize that they can have somebody like you helping them?
Yes. So the first thing to realize is that there is the financial industry is unique where there's not regulation in certain parts. For example, like you completed a PhD, right? So you have your Dr. Caroline. Well, you could, if you went to bed tonight, you could wake up in the morning and say, okay, I am financial planner Caroline. Like there's really not regulation that says that you cannot call yourself a financial planner, a financial advisor. And this is where people get taken advantage of because there are insurance salesmen, shady ones, who are just insurance agents, or they just sell different types of products and they label themselves as, oh, I'm a financial advisor, but they have no certification behind that name. So that's the number one area people get taken advantage of because there's other people out here. So if you're, and then another 2 point, there are a lot of bigger financial firms that if you don't have X amount of wealth or you are not transferring in assets or you cannot hand them a blank check figuratively, they don't want you as a client because that's how they make their money. So that's why it's important that if you're going to seek out a financial planner or advisor, you work with a fee-only advisor is like my number one suggestion. So there's three tiers. You have commission. Those are the ones who may not talk to you if you don't have the wealth, the assets, or can give them money and they can buy the assets for you. Then you have fee-based. Now, those are double dippers. Is a fun way to call them. They get commission off of sales and you are paying them a fee. And then the third is the fee only advisors. They only get paid by you. They don't sell insurance products. They do not make commission off of anything. Like that's against their mantra. Another thing, if you are looking for a financial planner or an advisor, make sure they have a role as a fiduciary. And that just means they have to have your best interest in mind. So example, like people who make commission, even though they say they have your best interest in mind, there still can be that little thing in the back of their head that if I push this product, I get a higher commission versus if I push this product, even if it's better for said client, I can, you know, I'll get a smaller commission. So you never know where someone morally may be on the compass. So that's why certain people feel like those who earn commission have, you know, it's a pull between good and evil, I would say. And last thing on the fee-only advisor, like to ensure that they have a role of a fiduciary, I would seek out someone who has the CFP, the Certified Financial Planner designation. And there are websites for this also. If you typed in that you wanted to find a CFP, like there are websites that you can put in your state, your city, your zip code, and you can see if there's one in your area that you can set up a plan with.
Oh, that was very informative. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think that's important to know the differences because a lot of people don't like what we're talking about. There's a lot of people out there that don't have the best interest for somebody, but just knowing what you're looking for, I think really helps people to understand too. And I'm curious, what are 2 to 3 tips you could give somebody who's beginning their entrepreneurial journey or in the midst of it that you wish you would have known when you started?
Yes. Number one, I would have your business plan like down pack. And that is like what you want to accomplish, what you want to do, and how do you see yourself doing that? Because I think that kind of keeps you on the path because you can easily get distracted by like, you know, there may be something that you may want to implement your business like at a later date, but you haven't even completed steps 1, 2, and 3, and you're trying to jump over here to step 10. Same as any person who's like on a financial journey, we can easily get distracted. Number two, I would definitely say don't depend on your family and friends to support you because they aren't your niche. They are not your clients. So I know I see a lot in like entrepreneurial groups that I'm in, people are like, oh, my family and friends don't share my stuff. And I'm like, well, to bring it back to focus, do you really want to work with your family and friends? Because like me personally, I don't work with my family and friends with their finances because I feel like that's a little too close to home for me.
Yeah.
So something to keep in mind. And then number three, just make sure you're having fun because like I love this. Like, I love helping people with their finances. I love helping people get on track. And I mean, like, I know there's a lot of entrepreneurs who are just like so stressed. And I'm like, you don't need extra stress in your life because there's already so much stuff going on in the world. And then especially if you're like me, you work a full-time job. Like, I don't need additional stress in my life. Like, so make sure that whatever you're doing is going to bring some joy and happiness to your life. Now, there's going to be good days, there's going to be bad days, but just understanding that if you're having way more bad days than good days, you need to self-evaluate.
Those are phenomenal. Thank you. Thank you. Sure those are really helpful. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to agree on that. But I've been loving this conversation, and we're going to jump into the rapid fire questions if you're ready for them.
Yes, let's go.
The first question is, who is your hero?
Man, I have to, I'm going to say both of my parents, because if I say one of them, I'm going to hear it. So both of my parents are my hero because they definitely like instilled in me, like they wanted me to be better than them. And I'm definitely grateful for that.
Well, they sound like amazing parents. And they raised an amazing daughter. What motivates you to work smarter?
Man, like just my own personal goals, because I'm definitely the person that I don't want to work till I die. I definitely want to provide a better, like I would want my kids to have it even better than I had it. And definitely, you know, just want to set them up for success and start building generational wealth for them and then for their future kids. So yeah, definitely get this train rolling on the side. Like someone has to kick the first stone, and I decided that it was going to be me.
Go you. I love that. I feel the empowerment. So if you were a superhero, what would be your power or powers?
Man, it would be mind control, because I think, like, I, as a child, I was a big X-Men fan. And okay. So, yeah, Jean was, like, my favorite with, like, all, like, her telekinesis, just all of those types of powers. But definitely, like, now, like, Scarlet Witch Marvel series has my heart. Like, so I'm looking forward to her movie, side note. But definitely just, yeah, any of those powers, telekinesis, any type of mind control, moving matter would just.
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
What is the phone app that you use the most?
Man, Facebook. I'm always on Facebook, and it's not just business related. I just follow, like, I consider myself a nerd, so I follow a lot of like different entertainment avenues. So definitely getting news from them, or, you know, just listen, like different video posts. I have a lot of friends and family who are, especially older family, that are on Facebook that we used to keep in contact with. I'm in different Facebook groups, like whether it's for entrepreneur or it's for the more nerdy things, like people post all day. So that's, Facebook is definitely like my de-stressor.
Ooh, I love it. Yeah, Facebook is definitely a good one. What is the last book that you've read?
The last book I read is actually, it was A Financial Coaching Playbook by, I think her name is Kelsey Dickey, if I'm saying her name correct, but she's a financial coach that has built a successful business, and she made like a playbook for other financial coaches.
That's very neat. Sounds like a really good read and helpful. What is your favorite family recipe, whether it's traditional or you just love making it as a family together?
Man, so my dad has this secret sauce, right, for barbecue, and he'll kill me if I even said one ingredient, but we'll mix it together, and he puts it in this big jug, and then like he sprays it like on all his ribs and chickens and stuff, and it tastes so good. And like my parents, they're caterers also, so like people will pay for him to cook, because he's just that good of a cook. So I would divulge, but again,
keep it in the family, but it sounds delicious. If you had to describe yourself as an animal, personality type, style, what animal would you be?
Man, I would probably be a sloth, because I still get the job done. It just takes me a little while.
Fair enough. And they're so cute though.
Yes.
What's your favorite way to spend a day off? So if you aren't seeing clients, you don't, I know you have a full pack schedule, but if you have a day off.
Yes. And yeah, if I'm not doing anything on a Saturday, it's just me and the dog, and we're probably binging some type of TV series. And then I also like deep clean that, you know, because clutter, it just irritates me. So yeah, I'll also like deep clean, we'll binge something on TV. I usually watch it. She's usually asleep, or we'll go somewhere and I'll get her like a pup cup, like from Starbucks. And then, you know, it just really depends. Or we'll may go see my parents, and then she loves my parents.
Naturally. Well, it sounds like a perfect day off. What is something an outsider wouldn't know about your industry?
Man, they wouldn't. Man, there's too much that an outsider would not know. But there is, I would say, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And the meaning that there's so many different sectors of finance that won't even overlap.
Well, that's a good point. See, I've learned so much from you today, and I know everyone else watching has learned so much. But before I let you go, where can people find you, hire you? We'll link everything below, but if you could let us know too.
Yes, like I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter. I also run a Facebook financial literacy group called Currency with Catherine, the K. Is K in currency and K in Catherine. So don't get confused. Yes. And then my business page is Bridge Financial Boutique, and the E in Bridge is actually a 3.
Love it. Well, Catherine, thank you so much for coming on, sharing all your wisdom around financial literacy, just being able to help people truly understand their finances, because that is such a huge topic in every relationship and every individual that we have to know. But the more we know, the more we can make educated decisions. So I just appreciate you coming on and sharing all that you did today.
And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment below what was the biggest takeaway from Catherine that you learned about financial literacy, generational wealth. Please let us know. I'm sure she would love to see it too. And we'll see you on the next video.